What's good, everybody? This episode of the podcast is sponsored by DistroKid. They are the go-to for digital music distribution and the easiest way for musicians to get your music onto Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, TikTok, YouTube, and more. They offer unlimited uploads, and artists keep 100% of their earnings in stores 10 to 20 times faster than any other distributor. Fastest payouts. They help out with automatic splits, cover song clearance, and all kinds of other amazing tools and templates to help you get the most visibility for your releases. I dig this company and appreciate their business model that offers more features than any other distributor at the most affordable price possible for solo musicians, bands, DJs, studio artists, and any other creators that are producing music in their home, and they also offer label services as well. They've got three different tiers to offer creators that start as low as $22.99 a year. That's just $1.92 a month, and even their top tier is just $7.50 per month. And the best part about DistroKid sponsoring the podcast is that they are offering Dan Cable Presents listeners and viewers 30% off your first year membership with DistroKid, making their already affordable prices even cheaper for you. Check out the link in the episode notes. I will also put it in my Instagram bio in the link tree. That link will give you 30% off that first year of service. Super stoked to have DistroKid sponsoring the podcast and cannot thank them enough for their longtime support of this thing. This episode of the podcast is also sponsored by Puff Coffee. Puff is one of my favorite coffee shops in Portland, Oregon. They've got a location off 28th and Stark in Southeast. Their coffee is delicious and everyone that works there is always super friendly. I had the pleasure of staying in their neighborhood for a month or so, and it was just a real treat to have this as my neighborhood coffee shop for a bit. And now I find myself going out of my way to get over there and get some coffee. Puff Coffee was started by the founder of Stumptown Coffee, and they are making small batch coffee roasted daily here in Portland. Their mission: to find, roast, and deliver the most delicious coffees anywhere. Their small batch process means that they get to keep things interesting with experimental blends and single origin gems while always keeping the classics on deck. They've got a variety of beans to choose from, and if you're not in the Portland area, you can order their small batch coffee straight to your home through their website. And you can use the coupon code DANCABLE, all one word, for 20% off a coffee subscription. Links for Puff Coffee will be in the episode notes. Big thanks to Puff for supporting the show and for their amazing small batch coffee. Now let's get into the episode. What is happening, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Dan Cable Presents podcast. Thank you for tuning into the program once again. If this is your first time listening, thanks for checking out the show. You can find fresh episodes coming at you every Tuesday. And if you want to help support this thing in a free way, you can do so by clicking subscribe on iTunes, clicking write a review, giving the podcast 5 stars if you feel like it is deserving of so. And that will help propel this thing into the tops of those iTunes charts, which will give it more visibility on the national and international levels, helping strangers find the podcast, and just a great way to contribute to the growth and sustainability of this thing. Appreciate the hell out of all the folks that have already taken the time to do so. If you're not listening on Apple, just hit like, follow, subscribe wherever you are listening from. Give it 5 stars on Spotify. Hit the subscribe button if you are watching on YouTube, and tell a friend about the podcast if you're digging it. Check out the monthly playlist that I've been dropping every first of the month. Those are available on Spotify, pretty spread out genre-wise, and just a snapshot of what I'm listening to throughout the month, and the links for those will be in the episode notes. Stoked to get into episode 403 of the podcast with Portland-based band The Fourth Wall, one of my favorite bands in this city, and just so pumped that I finally got to have them on. It's a band that I've been wanting to have on the podcast for a long time, and it just felt like a great time to get to chat with them as they just dropped their brand new record, Return Forever. It's my favorite album that the band has put out thus far. They've got a deep catalog that goes back 15 years with this thing, so it was really fun to get to chat with them about their band history and this new record, as well as just how things have evolved and developed over time. And it was my first time getting to hang with Casey, the band's guitar player, but Kendall, who plays synths and sings backups, is a longtime Portland homie, and she came on the podcast back in 2019 to talk about her project, Star Over Blue, which is another gem of the Portland music scene. And Stefan, who sings leads and contributes to a majority of the songwriting for the band, is someone I've gotten to hang out with quite a bit over the last few months, and I just always enjoy spending time with both of them. And this was also the first band hang that happened in the studio since starting to film these things. So let me know what you think of the setup, and definitely go and check out the new record from The Fourth Wall, Return Forever. It's available wherever you stream music now. And you can also pick up a vinyl copy. Those are in the works as well. So make sure to check out the links for the band in the episode notes if you want to keep up with them. If you're new to the band, there's plenty of music to catch up on. Lots of great records from The Fourth Wall. And I think that's all the things. I got to go pack for Treefort, which is a music festival happening in Boise, Idaho, this week. It'll be my fourth time going out there. I'm really stoked to get back out to Boise. Always enjoy my time out at Treefort. I'll be recording some podcasts out there, so stay tuned for some work from the road, bringing the camera set up. We're going to see what happens out there in the wild. And yeah, we're going to get into this thing. Links for everything will be in the episode notes. Hit me with an email, and appreciate you tuning in as always. And this is episode 403 of the podcast with The Fourth Wall, and we're going to kick it off with one of my favorite tracks from the Return Forever record. It is called Can't Lose That Loss. Let's do the damn thing.
Yes, it's fun. Okay, cool.
All right.
Sweet.
Are we ready to do this? The Fourth Wall?
I think I'm ready. Ready as I'll ever be.
As ready as you'll ever be. Well, I will start off with a little bit of gushing and just say that I love your band so much. I think the first time that I got to see The Fourth Wall was at the Doug Fir pre-pandemic. Y'all opened for Small Million.
Yeah.
That was, yep. And I didn't know anything about your band before that show, and saw that set, and I thought that was really great. And then the pandemic happened, and you know, everything just like fell by the wayside.
Yeah.
and then Steph and I started like seeing you just popping around, always seeing you at shows or getting connected with you through like Kendall from like the Star Over Blue crew and Babers. And then I saw that Baber show.
Yeah.
I saw y'all open for Babers and then recently at Holocene. But yeah, just a big fan of the songwriting.
Thank you so much.
And I feel like there's a lot that I want to dive into. You know, you got like a 15-year history or so with this band, which is
that
crazy?
What it is? Yeah.
Or at least like, I don't know, the first record is dated back to 2011.
Yeah.
So let's start there. Talk to me about the early days of The Fourth Wall and how you and Casey got connected initially to start this band.
Yeah, well, Casey and I were co-workers at a music store.
Okay.
Well, we were friends first.
Yes.
Yeah. Is that true, Casey? Were you friends first?
You're questioning it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we were friends first. I think I was actually just a customer first.
You were a customer, yeah.
Then I think Stefan fixed my guitars.
Yeah.
Where was this at?
This was in Kailua on Oahu.
Okay.
It was this musical instrument store I worked at. It was like my first real job. Kind of a dream job for being, I don't know how old I was, like 18 probably. Casey would come in, and I don't know when you eventually got a job there.
Yeah, that's probably, I think, soon, probably like my first kind of real job.
Yeah,
I was like probably 18.
Yeah.
So
And were both of you playing a lot of music at this time? Like individually?
I was. I was in a band or several different bands, like, I think at the time. Or no, I was in one band at the time, but I had been playing in bands for a while. But that band, it was called Our Distance. It that band broke up and I was kind of doing some solo music at the time, like performing solo. And I think I just wanted more members to hop on because it's hard to do everything.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, Casey, I think, was our first show like maybe just the two of us or?
Yeah, I think it probably was. Yeah. I think I remember seeing maybe one of your early shows with Motion and Rest.
Oh, yeah.
Solo.
Yep.
I remember.
And yeah. You're like, man, that sucked.
Like, I remember there were some struggles with like a drum machine.
Man, that was awful. I want to start a band with this guy.
It was like charity. It's like, I need to help this guy.
Yeah. Were you songwriting from a pretty early age, Stefan? Like when you started playing music, was that your kind of your gravitation?
Yeah, I think so. I think, I mean, I started playing music, I think I was like, maybe 11 years old or something. And I think quickly found friends who wanted to be in a band. Like just the idea of being in a band was maybe more important than like learning an instrument.
Yeah.
Like,
it's pretty cool to be in a band in high school.
It was cool. Yeah. Yeah. I remember like, we were just like doodling like band logos in elementary school.
Yeah.
None of us knew what we were going to play yet. Like we were just discussing like, yeah, I'll be the drummer and you be the bass player. Like we didn't have any instruments or anything at the time, but yeah, it was just a dream of being in a band. And I think quickly evolved into like, if we're going to play music, we should like play something other than like Blink-182 covers. And then just started writing basically just mimicry, like mimicking all these other bands we learned.
Yeah. Was it things like in that realm though, like Blink and like pop punk and kind of like screamo type stuff or like
there's a lot of experimenting with what we liked, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely got into that. Definitely more emo things. I'm trying to remember what I've like repressed so much of like the first songs I wrote, so I'm like trying to remember what it sounded like.
Casey, before you walked into that that music shop and came across Stefan, like, what was your experience playing music at that point?
Yeah, I guess, like, played music all a long time since I was a kid, I guess, and played various, kind of same vibe, I'd say.
Yeah.
Some fake bands. And then in high school, I made a lot of music with our dear friend and bass player, Chris. We had various experimental projects.
Yeah.
I think at one point even attempted some rap, but, So yeah, just kind of, you know, finding our way through, a lot of genres. And
what was guitar your main instrument though, from kind of the jump?
I would say it was definitely guitar. Yeah, it's what I started playing on in like elementary school, and yeah, I got kind of more serious into playing guitar in high school. Didn't really have girlfriends, just my guitar practicing.
Were you guys like I don't know. I gather from what I've seen in the live shows and even listening to the records that there's a lot there's a lot happening with like pedals and things like that. You know, I feel like shaping the tones of everything. Was it always coming from it like as kind of gear nerds? Like you really enjoyed messing with pedals and finding tones?
That's a really good question, actually. I think yes. Like our first record was very minimal though, I feel.
Yeah.
Like in terms of effects.
Yeah.
I've always loved playing with sounds though, because like at the time of songwriting, like when I was starting to write songs, I think I was recording them on like a like horrible computer. I feel like I even recorded some stuff on like a mini disc player, like just like totally blown away by the that technology can capture like sound in this way. And so I feel like I would tinker for sure with like the way things sounded from an early age, but the pedals, I feel like, started to maybe get out of hand like by the by the second record or so. And then I feel like we're trying to I don't know, figure out what our deal is there.
Been downsizing.
Well, I think
we got to a certain point. I actually got a smaller pedal board.
Okay.
Now, because I'm like, I got
there's too many options.
Too many, you know. Getting too complicated.
Yeah. It's just something I've like always like really appreciated about your band in the live form. It just always seems like everything is so dialed in. You know, like I feel like you could play a shitty sounding room and you can make it sound good. I don't know. I guess I don't always feel like the Holocene is my favorite venue to see music as far as the sound that comes out of that place.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're just like one of those bands where I feel like everything is still cutting through. So I feel like there must be a lot of time dedicated to knowing what your instruments are going to sound like in maybe in different spaces. I don't know if that's like how much of a conscious thing that is when rehearsing and thinking about those things.
Yeah. Well, thank you for saying all that. That's very kind of you. Yeah, I don't know. I think, in different rooms, it definitely feels weird, but I feel like we've played in so many different places that this idea that the way it sounds to you on the stage is just like nothing like what it'll sound out there. And I feel like for me, I've just gotten used to like feeling like this is just sounding really bad up here, but I'm just going to trust whatever the sound person is doing out there. So yeah, I don't know. I feel like it takes a lot of like, maybe an attitude of like the performance isn't, so based on like the way it sounds on stage, and just hope that whatever room you're in is like just kind of trusting the sound personnel to like make it okay.
What do you guys remember about like the first time you played music together, like got together to actually work on stuff together?
I think I remember like from one of our first shows, I was playing drums, which is never a good sign.
Oh, wow.
not even like real drums. I think it was like a tom and
like a ride
or something.
Yeah.
So definitely had to find our way.
Or do you like remember what kind of attracted you two to like wanting to play music together? Like, was there like a pretty similar lens that you were coming at it from, or like just like a shared interest in the bands that you guys were listening to at the time, or like what made sense for you guys to want to play music together?
Yeah, that's a good question. I feel like, I mean, we're from like a pretty small town in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And so there, I would say, musically, not a lot of like-minded folks at the time to like bounce ideas off of. And so I think it was kind of just, you know, natural that we would kind of find each other and talk about music. And I mean, we worked at the music shop, so
I mean, through that, like the music store was really slow, like in terms of customer.
Totally.
Like, there's a lot of downtime.
So you had limited options.
Yeah.
And you were stuck with each other.
Yeah.
To
we were
play
stuck
music.
With each other. And I think we would just play each other things like, oh, check out this band or, so we were just sharing music as part of like probably the foundation of how we became friends, I think.
Totally. Yeah.
And
just jamming.
And I would go over to Casey's house after work often, and we would just like, I don't know, play guitar together or listen to records and
drink cheap whiskey.
Yes. There's that.
Just always kind of working on tunes though together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of.
I think it was more it was less serious than working on tunes, I think. Yeah. Like our relationship at that time, it was more like, let's just hang out and play music.
Totally.
And then I think like as we started playing like more shows and stuff, then I feel like it was like maybe got more serious at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did it turn into a band like pretty quickly between the two of you? Like how long from like when you guys first met, started hanging out, kind of messing around together, like before you put out that first Fourth Wall record?
Oh,
That first one was kind of interesting because you had already pretty much recorded the entire thing in his bedroom.
Okay. And that's you've just like always had that, been able to do some DIY recording.
Yeah, I mean. It's because
he gave me a copy of like the original recording. Okay. I think we were both at, we went to the same like community college and everything, so
before you feel impressed by that, you should hear the recordings
of the first record.
Like
is there like one before the 2011 release?
Yeah,
okay,
that is not out, but I basically recorded that whole thing.
Yeah,
I guess you would call it a demo.
Okay, all right.
But I was like, I thought it was just going to be a thing I would release, but we kind of had this opportunity to work with this record producer. His name is Manny Nieto. He was, I think he's like a friend of Steve Albini and like learned recording through him.
Okay.
And he was in Hawaii for some reason. Oh, it was for Steve Albini's wedding. And he was in, maybe he came to one of our shows and convinced us to fly to LA to record our first record. And I had sent him like the demo recordings and he was like, I mean, he liked them, but we're like, I think this could be so much better.
Better than your little DIY.
And he was right. And I was like, okay, fair enough.
I would imagine too, though, that's like such a different time for like home recordings too. Like you're saying, you know, like GarageBand probably wasn't even a thing at that time.
Yeah. I didn't have a MacBook. It was like some old PC. I think the software I was using was made by Sony. It's called Acid Pro. And do you know Acid Pro?
No.
Okay.
It's just like, sounds like it's of the time.
Yes. It definitely is of the time. And it definitely doesn't exist anymore, but that software. But that is what I was using and just learning. I mean, all the limitations of the software, I feel like, kind of pushed me to experiment with sounds like outside of the editing side of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what that first demo recordings were. And actually one song on the first record called Beware the Furnace was my home recording of it. So that one they just kind of left because they liked it.
Yeah.
The producer we were working with said, like, let's just leave it.
So you guys flew out to LA to make that record?
We did, yeah. Yeah, so we had to build a band, basically.
Because it was like just you and Casey at that time then?
Pretty much, and our friend Paul, who we also like worked with at the music store.
That's right, yeah.
And it was kind of like pretty short turnaround to like make it happen. So
I feel like less than a year we had to like get our shit together,
like, and create a band
and like try to learn these songs,
create a sound.
Who was drumming?
So Kemo was our first drummer.
His name's Kemo Short,
and he was just like this kid that came into the music store. He played drums.
Like, we need a drummer.
That's kind of how it worked.
Yeah
What was that experience like? Just, had you ever been to California even at that point in your life? Or,
I mean, for me, not really. Like, I had been to, like, I think my parents brought me to like Disneyland when I was 4 years old. Okay. And I have no real recollection of that.
Yeah.
I actually didn't know really anything about it, but somehow we just trusted this stranger to like,
I would imagine if someone of that caliber is like, hey, you should go do this thing, I think that there's something here, then you kind of follow that.
Yeah, I just Yeah, I don't know what it was, because he had worked on some records I really liked. He worked on this Breeders album. Which one was it? I think it's called Mountain Battles.
Okay.
And he did, like, I don't know if it's the first Health record or maybe the second one. I think it was called Get Color. And I loved those albums and was just, like, fascinated by the sound of them. And so I was like, I guess I'm going to do this. Because Hawaii actually doesn't have that, or at the time I was unaware of, didn't really have a lot of, like, recording studios that, like, had producers that, like, shared the same, like, taste in our music, I think. There's a lot of studios doing, like, Hawaiian music, of course, and reggae. But, yeah, I just felt like there was no one really that got it. Like what we were trying to do. So it's like, yeah, we might as well go elsewhere.
Yeah, for sure. And how did things kind of progress from there? Like, when do y'all move to Portland, Oregon and make this home?
So soon after that record, we got some kind of insane gigs, I think, in Hawaii. Like, we opened for Andrew Bird, and that was awesome. We also opened for The Shins, and that was awesome as well.
Is that kind of just like a thing, like, just not a whole lot of bands kind of like in that general genre? So you're like,
yeah,
getting these opening opportunities because a lot of people aren't bringing support all the way to Hawaii?
I imagine it's kind of, it's a bit of small pool-ism. Like, we were part of a small group of like bands that did kind of our music, and I don't think these bigger bands brought their own opening acts, so it was like a kind of cool opportunity to sort of sneak in to play those places. But I feel like at the time we were getting these like really amazing shows, it still felt like just too small in a way, and also just maybe we felt a little undervalued. Like, there's one main production company that would put on these big shows, and they would give us a call to play these, but they would be like, yeah, we're giving you this opportunity to play, but we're not going to pay you.
A little exploitive.
Yeah, it was a little bit.
Like, yeah, but you're getting this great opportunity.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, but you made a lot of money from this show.
Yeah, exactly.
And also put up these 300 posters.
Yeah, they made us.
You were the street team also?
Yeah, they required us.
That's
to. Dude.
It was bad. We had to also take photos as proof that we put up the posters.
This is as egregious as me having to do a bunch of pay-to-play shows in LA when I was growing up. Like,
yeah. So we were like,
sell these 40 tickets or you can't play.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah, and so I think at that point we were like, let's just leave. And like, as sad as it was, because I mean, that is like where we grew up and like it's an important place for us still. I just felt like there wasn't much room to grow from there. Like, we thought if that was the top that we could do on Oahu,
yeah,
we should probably leave.
Definitely some limitations there.
And like touring.
Yeah, touring would be just tough.
No real opportunity for that.
Yeah, and that was definitely like something you guys wanted to kind of explore with this band and see where it could go, especially with like the early interest of like these other people and kind of getting some of these opening slots.
Yeah, well, that was kind of the dream. It was like to play music in all these different places and just see how far we could take it.
Yeah. When did you land here in Portland then?
2012, I believe. Okay. Summer of 2012.
And what attracted you all to like making this the home base for this band? Because I think in talking to you in the past, you thought about LA would maybe be the spot. I guess that makes sense since you all went there to make that record.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it just seemed like an easier place to exist. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that was part of it.
Yeah,
it was affordable at the time too, or more affordable.
Yeah. Did y'all like immediately jump into the music scene, like playing shows around town, or were you doing some smaller tours around that time?
Actually, it did take us a little while because our drummer did not move with us. And so we had to find another drummer.
Yeah.
But we also had to find, like, jobs and stuff, yeah, too.
For sure.
How are we going to survive? So I feel like it took us, like, a year, maybe?
There's definitely a...
get settled.
Bit of a transition.
Yeah. And find someone else to play drums with us. And even then, I mean, it's just... being a band and, like, touring is just something that seems so hard to figure out also. Yeah. Because I think, like, we were just more focused on, like, the creative side of it, and we loved the making music part of it. But then trying to, like, email everyone in the world about, can we play here, was, like, a new thing for us. So I feel like that took us a while to get a handle on.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, you guys have made like 4 full lengths now with this new one, you know. Yeah. So fill in the, like, I guess the gaps in between this time. So 2011, the first record comes out.
Yeah.
Which also, I think it's very rad that you put out this new version of The Furnace,
which is
not on the on the new record, but I thought that was like a cool thing to release in between. The new record coming out, what made you want to revisit that track and put out like this full band version, or like this representation of like maybe where the band is at now?
I think like that song, the original version, was like probably I think the first like solo song I ever did for this project, and we just never really played it like that for a really long time, because that would mean I'd have to bring like an acoustic guitar, which is like another piece of equipment. And I feel like, just stylistically, we were kind of going for more a heavier, more bigger, expansive sound, I think. And I think it was more of a fun thing to just kind of experiment to see what it would be like recording that song, like the way we started playing it live.
The acoustic guitar hasn't made an appearance in a long time.
It's gathering dust.
Is that so like where a lot of the initial songs are being kind of written for you, or like the initial bones of a song, or like maybe a better, because I feel like there's such like a long history with this band, so like maybe asking you to fill in the gaps is like not a great question. But like talk to me about like more I guess about like what are the creative dynamics, and I will bring Kendall into the fold.
I want to
make sure that like the history is covered, but I know Kendall is like a big part of the, you know, the new era of this thing. And she's also a veteran of this podcast.
Yes.
You know, we did a Star Over Blue episode with her and Dirk.
2019, right?
Is it 2019?
I think so. Yeah.
In your kitchen?
Yes.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Before when the show was a traveling show.
That was really cool. No, we were just talking about that today, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, I will definitely bring Kendall into the fold, because I also feel like you probably have like a unique perspective on this band coming in the way that you have, you know, after it's been around for almost 15 years.
For sure.
But Casey and Stefan, like what are the creative dynamics between the two of you as far as the songwriting, and maybe how have they evolved over time?
I feel like it's a fun like kind of journey, or like Stefan will present some kind of like maybe like a riff or some idea, or like a melody or something, and then kind of like just build from there, I think, generally. And then just kind of get ideas from that, or, you know, just sit around and like, it's just like a lot of jamming and I'd say fun.
Yeah,
having fun with it, and then eventually like kind of starts like fleshing out. Even like recording, I feel like that's kind of how we do it too.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, a lot of experimentation.
I feel like in a weird way, it's like doing the same things we've always done. Like it's always like, we'll just text each other, like a link to a song that we're into. And I feel like it starts kind of bouncing around in both of our heads, like just some element of it. And then, yeah, I don't know. It's hard to kind of describe. I feel like we don't like, it's hard to articulate. Like, it's like, yeah, we just kind of bounce ideas off of each other, just by sharing music that we're into and listening. Mm-hmm. And then we just figure out how the coolest elements of those things can go into songs that we're working on currently. And,
yeah. And I feel like it's not like we just like get in and like grind out like a song. It just kind of takes, I don't know, organically kind of comes about like over time, and yeah, like sending ideas back and forth. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know that this Return Forever record mm-hmm. has been done for a while.
Yes.
Have you guys always been like pretty meticulous about the songs that you're putting out? Like, you mull over them for a long time before you're like, all right, this is the final version.
Yes.
15 years.
To a fault.
Four albums.
I would say,
to do
yes.
the math, it's about once every 4 years.
Don't put it like that, man. I don't want to hear that.
Well, it's been almost 6 years since the last full length of Still Mad.
But yeah, I mean, it might be that, because, well, after the first record was recorded, when we moved here, we kind of like wanted to make that next record ourselves and just see how far we could get. I mean, mainly because we were just all broke and just getting our footing here in Portland, yeah. And like weren't able to like really dream of like hiring an engineer or booking studio time or anything.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think the recording processes are also just like learning processes for me too. Like, oh, I'm kind of there's a lot of experimentation with like sounds and how to make it into a listenable product.
You made all the records by yourself?
Lovely Violence and Infinite Other, yes, and this
and the new one, right?
Yeah, and the new one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was really blown away when you told me that
you
made this record in your just in your practice space.
Yeah, in our
pretty
practice
much.
Space. Yeah,
yeah, because I got to hear this thing like back in October, I think the record was sent to me, and yeah, I was really blown away by it. I emailed you amidst listening to it before I could even finish it. I was like, dude, this fucking rules. And then, like probably like 25 minutes later, I was like, I actually finished it now. And it just keeps getting better every, like, as I got deeper and deeper into the tracks, I was just so blown away by the songwriting. And then to like find out that you made this record in your practice space was even more impressive to me, because I think it sounds really great.
Well, thank you so much.
I think it's a great representation of like what the live show is too.
Oh, that's awesome to hear. Yeah, it's a because they do take a long time to do, so
yeah.
I would hope they're not terrible, but yeah, I think it's a I'm trying to think what the question is or what I'm about to say.
Well, you're talking about there's like a lot of experimentation.
Yes.
Because you're doing it on your own, so like is that something you really appreciate about kind of not having to have somebody else in the room, that you can kind of freely do that without worrying about somebody over your shoulder or like having to like waste someone else's time maybe, or not feeling like you're squeezed for time?
Yeah, that's a big thing, because I think with our first record it was like so expensive, and I mean it's like what a record costs. It's not like more expensive than probably any other cost of making a record, but it did, you really felt like the dollars like flying away from you.
Absolutely.
In the studio, it's like, oh man, how much are we gonna get to do in a day?
Yeah.
And then it's like the stress of that, I think, kind of prohibits you from really like sitting with the sounds and like really, you know, it's way easier to be like, oh man, it's like getting late, let's just put, you know, let's just call it a song at the end of the day.
You feel that pressure for sure.
Yeah, but with this I feel like we were able to like get some sounds, get some recording in, and like just sit with it for like 2 weeks and just listen to it over and over, and then find out what exhausts me about the song and what should like change and like how do I make this continually exciting. And so, yeah, I feel like we can contemplate just like how the song is composed and like the different sounds a lot easier if we're not like thinking about studio time.
Yeah, you can like really sit with something for a while and see where it's hitting or like what you're talking about, like this feels tired here.
Try
things that might not be cool at all, but just like have an idea and be like have the freedom to see it through and
totally
decide if it is cool or if it totally sucks.
I imagine that's where like good things happen too, though, where you're like, we did try this thing and it worked, it's crazy.
Yeah, there's an element, I think, of play. Like,
yeah, totally.
It's like playful.
Yeah, I think Stefan's really good about that too, with like recording and like hearing new ideas or like being open to like a concept or idea and not just like saying like that sucks. And like, yeah, I think it creates like a cool opportunity and just have freedom, musical freedom to explore and find new sounds or I don't know.
Yeah.
Make things better than they were. But
I feel like we kind of like live in this era of music right now where a lot of people are kind of like producing music, maybe like what some would refer to as like in the box, like just on the computer at this point. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like y'all are like actually still jamming a lot of stuff like out in a room.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, that's one thing that is kind of important for us. Like, well, is like to play in a room together, like initially. Like, we will set mics up for everyone, basically, in our practice space. We won't use all the recordings that we get from that initial, like, scratch track. But I think, like, we set up everyone in the room to play together just so we get, like, the feel and the timing of everything. Usually with the intent of, like, grabbing the drums. And then we'll, like, add stuff after or retrack things on top of that after. But yeah, that kind of sense of time between all the members of the band, I think, was really important.
What do you feel like the biggest challenges of making your own record is? Because obviously you have the freedom, which is great. And the experimentation can go pretty wild. But like, is there like almost too much time, do you feel like, sometimes to tinker with things?
Oh, yeah. I'd say the biggest challenge is like not sleeping. Like, because you... because you're just so tired, but you're so obsessed also. I do feel like maybe if there was someone like we trusted to just like tell me like, hey, go to bed, or like or just someone to say like this sound, like sometimes the amount of difference between one sound and another is like so minuscule that it truly does not matter. But there's something in my brain that's like, this is the world.
Yeah.
Like, this much difference will save everything.
I can't even imagine with like dealing with instrumentation. 'Cause I do the same shit with just like the volumes of mics for this.
Oh yeah, you get it.
And I'm just like, I'm gonna turn this up, and it's just like, no one can hear that, you know. This is just for you. Or just even ear fatigue happens editing a podcast. I'm sure like having to deal with that with actual instruments and you know, maybe 20 different tracks on a song is just completely overwhelming at points.
If it were only 20,
like that, you wish it was 20. Is there a certain point where like Casey or Kendall has to like tell you to back off and you're just like, I think the song is done, like you have to let Stefan know?
They do tell me that and I just don't listen to them.
You're just like, no, we're gonna tweak this one dB. Talk to me about how Kendall came into the fold of the Fourth Wall.
We had known of each other for a while because we've played in bands that Well, what am I saying? I've been only in one band this whole time. But our we've played shows together.
Yes.
In our own projects. And always loved the sound of Star Over Blue, Kendall's band. And I think probably when I was deep into the insanity of finishing the record, I was searching for like different maybe sounds or textures, and a lot of the harmonies were sung by myself at the time, at this level of, or at this stage of mixing it, and yeah. I just felt so exhausted by my own voice. I was like, I think I want to ask someone else to sing on this record. And I forget if, was I at your show or vice versa?
Vice versa. I was at your show. Okay. Yes. Yeah. At the Holocene. It was like the, maybe the Fourth Wall's first show back after all the pandemic stuff. Yeah. And it was, yeah, I remember it was a time where people were still very hesitant about coming out to the shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was when we kind of, I think you asked me after that show if I'd be interested in doing some harmonies for the record and stuff. I was like, awesome. So excited. Cause we've known each other since like, what did we decide it was, like 2016 when my band relocated to Portland. And so, yeah, the Fourth Wall was like one of the very first bands that Star Over Blue played with when we moved here. Okay. And so I always tell everyone, like, I've been a fan of the Fourth Wall for a really long time. And, I mean, songs from Lovely Violence are, like, I always kind of consider them, like, sort of, like, the soundtrack of, like, the era that we moved to Portland. Like, yeah. Like, Dying Lights and Live Again, Ashes of God, like, all these things, like, they're kind of just in my earlier memories from living here. So it was cool to, to kind of have it come full circle and be asked to, you know, collaborate in this project and everything. And that would have been about 2 years ago now that we started.
That sounds right.
Working together. Yeah. Yeah. Something like that.
So you certainly came in to the band as a fan.
Yes.
You knew all these songs already.
Yeah. I love this music. I love it even more now.
How would you say Kendall has kind of like maybe shaped the depth of maybe those harmonies and backup vocals for the record and for the live show? Like, has it just been able to explore different dynamics with that because of that added voice?
Totally. Yeah. I feel like the realm of like what I considered possible for my own voice, I feel like was expanded by Kendall for sure. Just like the different sound of her voice and different notes she's able to get. And I feel like harmonies are such a crazy, like, visceral thing. Like, when two people are singing together, it's two or more people, I feel like there's something that resonates like so profoundly, like more than instruments making harmonies with each other. And so, yeah, I think it was just like, it helped me finish the record and kind of like, gave me a better sense of where everything else instrumentation wise should go. Just getting like another voice in there. So yeah, definitely changed my thinking about all of it.
Yeah. It's this like incredibly communal thing, I think, with the harmonies. And it's like what I appreciate about Star Over is there's, these vocal harmonies going on.
For sure.
Kendall, like what was it like inserting yourself into this band that had existed for so long and like just kind of figuring out like what their dynamics were and how you could appropriately kind of insert yourself?
Yes, that is a really great question. And I would say I was extremely intimidated. I think because I went into it with that knowledge that the project had existed for so long.
Yeah.
And I could relate to that because my own band has been on a similar trajectory, having been around like well over a decade at this point. And so I think I mean, the music side of things was one thing for me, but I think, you know, just getting up to speed, like learning material and, you know, how I'm going to contribute vocally and sonically with other textures and things, like that's one side of it. But the other side, like the scarier part is like, yeah, that sense of like, how do I like come into this thing that's existed for so many years before, you know, I've been a part of it, and not disrupt the dynamic.
Yeah.
Because like these guys have something really special, like they're childhood friends, they're, you know, that's a really beautiful thing. And I know that like the wrong personality can come in and like potentially blow things up in a really bad way. And so I was like going in, I was like, okay, I don't, that's what I know. I don't want to
blow up the thing.
I don't want to be like, just like a foul presence that comes in here. And so, yeah, that was always kind of in my mind, but like, yeah, my bandmates are such nice people and it helped that we had known each other just through the scene prior, and so I feel like my worries quickly dissipated, I guess.
Yeah, you weren't just like a stranger walking into the room like we're trying out a new vocalist today.
Yeah, right. We had some history, and I feel like it's in my experience just the way like this group operates. Like I feel like these guys are some of my closest friends at this point, so it's been a really positive experience. And at first those were definitely my concerns.
Yeah. How do you feel like you kind of like went about that as far as, you know, not wanting to like really interrupt the flow? Were you like kind of maybe more reserved in the beginning to maybe where you're at almost 2 years into playing with them and recording?
Yeah. I mean, I think I definitely feel more comfortable these days, in the sense that like, just we know each other better and everything like that. And I think also when I was first joining, I wasn't exactly sure like what my role would be entirely aside from just like singing, the harmonies and things from the record. But I think it's been cool because, you know, over the past 2 years, we kind of joke about it, but my setup has just been like expanding. And it's like, now there's like crazy ass, like tower of like synthesizers and samplers. And, you know, I've been through some like MIDI stuff and, it's been really cool just kind of easing into that. Cause at first I didn't really have an understanding of like how I'd be contributing, but, does that answer your question? I feel
I want to say Kendall has been sick.
I think Kendall has also been sick. I mean, I only saw one show prior to you not being in the band.
Really?
But I was so excited. I mean, I was already stoked on that. But then when I found out that you were playing in the Fourth Wall, I was very excited because I'm already such a fan of your songwriting and
your
band.
That's really nice of you. Thank you.
And I just thought it was such a cool add to the existing dynamic and those harmonies that you're talking about. I mean, like, I think that's a real added depth to this Return Forever record, you know, is hearing your voice on the thing as well, and like seeing how it plays into the live show.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been so fun. The record is just, it's rad. It was such a blast to get to be a part of that.
Is it a much different approach for you from what you do in your own band as far as like how you've gone about things and kind of playing the role of, you know, this backup vocalist and adding, you know, your sonic layers to thing?
Mm-hmm. It is really different. And sometimes I joke that I have a disease called lead singer syndrome where we'll be like at practice and Stefan's like singing. And it's like, I can't get out of my head that like, oh, I'm in a rehearsal space. Like I must be the lead vocalist. So I'll be like, he'll be ready to make his like vocal entrance. And then I'm like over here taking a breath and getting ready to sing. I'm like, no, what are you doing? Like, that's not my part. Like you're not singing the lead vocal. Like what are you, like, calm down.
Yeah.
type of thing. So, but yeah, I mean, I love being in a supporting role. It's been awesome. It's been less pressure just for my own brain in some ways. Like I still obsess over a lot of things in this group, but like I feel like because it's under the direction of my friends and like the way that they've established doing things, there's some like guardrails on my own tendencies toward insanity with recording and number of takes that I'm gonna do for vocals and things like that. So, yeah, I think it's been healthier in that regard.
Yeah. I would imagine it's nice to just like have this other thing to dive into also mm-hmm. and like step away from your project at times. And
yeah.
Maybe that, like,
it feels more joyful because of that, because it's like it's taken away, like, not that my own project isn't like a joy in a lot of ways, but it's like, you know what I mean? It's different.
Yeah.
I feel like less in my own head about it or something.
I'm
like
sure
that,
it makes you like more excited too when you do go back to your own project at times,
like
too.
Refreshed in a
gives
way.
Gives you that mm-hmm. extra energy towards it.
Totally.
Was it pretty conscious for you too, as far as bringing somebody new into the band? And I know that, you know, you're introducing like some newer members into the live show, but like, was that even a conscious thing for you when you bring someone like Kendall into the fold about like the environment that you're creating, as far as like the accessibility for someone to come in and give them some space to explore creatively?
That's a good question.
Or are you guys just nice dudes and it was just like
just nice?
Well, it's kind of like a weird time too, because it was during COVID.
Yes,
kind of. So like, right. I didn't really like hang out with you that much.
No,
until
we had never like really hung out just as friends.
Yeah.
Before collaborating.
I think I was even like in Hawaii when I got the text from Stefan that's like, hey, Kendall's gonna join the band.
Oh my god.
Just a heads up.
Yeah.
We have a new member.
It was funny.
You guys are probably like, what?
Because I remember talking to Chris and I was like, oh yeah, I think Kendall's joined it. Yeah, that was it.
So, Stefan, when you brought Kendall into the band without asking him first.
But I mean, I think we had kind of talked about
rogue
like,
and started adding people.
Like,
I mean, Kendall was no stranger at that point.
No, no stranger,
like,
but
she's
like,
maybe, because I feel like you started with sending me just tracks, like, of you recording your own voice.
Yeah, I was recording. That's exactly what it was.
And
I was
so
recording at home.
Yeah.
And sending Stefan stuff.
Totally. So we were working with each other for some amount of time. I was like, you're in.
Yeah. But so, like, it was like a weird time, because it was like all like very separate and like, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I mean, I during COVID too, like, I had to be like very kind of separate from activities and things. But yeah, it was cool to like actually start jamming. And,
yeah.
It's been, I would say, just awesome experience. Made the band way sicker.
I mean, there have been instances where we've, like, I would say, like, our first time finding a drummer was definitely weird because we knew nobody. And we went through a drummer.
Yeah.
And it was, the vibe wasn't right. And, like, so that happens. Like, we're familiar with that.
Yeah, Kendall was like, it was like seamless. It was almost like she'd been playing with us the entire time.
Well, I feel like it probably almost has to feel like that for it to feel right, since you guys have been friends so long and making music so long that you're probably pretty quickly going to know, right? Like, if it's the right thing or not.
Yeah, yes. Totally.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And like, I think like it's probably more important for that to be good, like for us to be friends, than it is for like someone to be like a virtuoso at some instrument. Not
so we
that
get we
that's
get both
because I you don't get the virtuoso with me.
Yes.
No
virtuosity.
Yeah. There's no
walk
virtuosity.
That back.
Angelic vocals.
She's so humble.
Boxes.
She's so humble.
Very humble. Yeah. Yes.
No, I mean that's the thing too. As we get older and into further into this game, it's just like, you could be like a monster musician and not be the right fit for the hang, and the hang is more important than anything at this point. I'm sure
you're gonna be like trapped in a van for like hours and hours on tour with these people, and
which we're about to experience for the first time with this new lineup.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Learn what everyone's snores sound like. It's going to be sick.
You have to be, I think, close to each other and friendly with each other to make it work, more so than a good musician.
Yeah.
And they're all good musicians, too. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm going to just say that.
I agree. Yeah. You too, Stefan. You're pretty good yourself. I really like your vocals are always killing for the live show and on the records. Like I love your voice on things, and also your lyrics. I'm a fan of as well.
Thanks.
Your style of delivering things. I'm curious, as far as the lyrics, has that always been solely you? And if so, like, do you keep them pretty close to yourself until you feel like they're pretty close to what the final version is going to be?
Yeah, I think, yeah, I've mostly done the lyrics I have done all the lyrics for all the records. And I do feel like it's hard for me to, I'll definitely be more free now with sending the band like something unfinished. Like,
yeah.
Maybe I'm just mumbling during like a verse or something and it's like, okay.
Yeah.
For me. But I used to be very like protective of like, I don't want to sound dumb.
Yeah. Like, super guarded with it.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, you didn't used to do karaoke and now you're,
that's true,
big karaoke
dude,
guy.
Are you a karaoke monster?
I don't know. I might be becoming one.
Let's hear about your go-to top three songs.
Top three? Well, I like a Springsteen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like a Bruce.
I like a Bruce.
The Boss.
Yeah. What else do?
You bust out, what's that? Is it Sarah McLachlan?
Oh, yeah. That song, Adia.
Okay.
He's not
afraid. He'll go.
Okay.
That cuts. One's really hard.
Way up into
you
the
like
falsetto.
To challenge yourself at karaoke. You're just like, I'm going to pick the hardest song right now. Vocally.
I think like what was hard for me with karaoke before was the spontaneity of it.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know if I'm doing karaoke right, but I will practice singing.
You're like, I'm going out tonight.
Yeah.
I got to put my reps in on these three songs,
yeah,
you know?
I've started like a karaoke playlist.
Oh,
and,
damn.
And I'll just like sing in my car just for fun and also like practice singing because I don't know that I am good at practice with my voice.
Yeah.
Or before.
So
karaoke
is your vocal practice.
It's my vocal practice.
You're really exploring things there.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's joyous and fun. Like, because I think what would happen was, okay, I would sing a karaoke song and then the bridge would come up and I'd be like, oh shit, I didn't know this song even had a bridge. And I would just feel really dumb.
That's like classic
there.
Karaoke problem. You know it till
it
you
is.
Get to the bridge.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Or you don't know that there's like a 36 bar instrumental and you're like,
yeah, just
fuck,
what am I
doing? Uncomfortably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Put the dance moves to you know.
Yeah,
to
yeah.
play.
So practicing has made me more confident in karaoke.
What would you say surprise. Has maybe like informed your lens for lyric writing?
That's a good question. I feel like with every album, I'll kind of try to like have some central idea or concept that all the other songs are kind of branches off of that. I do like feel like I am always trying to like consume a lot of like art, and I like to read a lot and like just try to see how other people put things in a poetic way.
Man, you readers, I feel like are always have like a cool approach to songwriting, because I feel like not everybody are like avid readers. I don't read very often. I've probably read like 10 books in my life outside of what was required for school, and maybe included a couple of those.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like that always is a cool way to informs like lyrics in a cool way.
Yeah, in a way, I feel like it makes it a little easier to write, because I feel like the trick for me is like to just flood my brain with the way other people do things, and then I feel like it kind of just like the excess of it just falls out of my head and onto the paper.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like that's like has been the trick for me for writing easier, is just to like stay sensitized to all the other art that's out there.
Yeah.
And
I don't know, maybe just me personally thinking, but I feel like this album seems to be like kind of the most like personal in terms of your writing, which I think is really kind of cool to see. And yeah, I don't know. That's just a comment that I have. Maybe you don't see it, but
you feel like that's true.
Yeah, I don't get it. No, I think it is true. I mean, this album, I think, came at a time when I was figuring some stuff out about myself and just like kind of, I'm trying to like figure out like why some of the themes of the album like really grabbed me at that moment. Maybe it was because there was this crazy pandemic.
Yeah.
And we were very separated from our family members and loved ones. And I think I was thinking about family in general and like the the kind of history that my family, some members of my family went through when they immigrated here. And I think also the kind of political tensions of our last president about immigration and otherness in general. I think that was on my mind. And I think I realized, like, I knew very little about where my family came from.
Yeah.
And I was started questioning, like, well, becoming interested in the stories behind that, but also why it was such a why there was like an order of silence on these topics. And I was like trying to kind of unearth some of these things that they had gone through that I had no idea about.
So this is like your opportunity to explore those things
through
the writing and maybe like added to some of the heaviness of the record.
Yeah, I think the heaviness, well, also it felt like the world was ending.
Yeah.
And I thought that was, that sucked. And, but yeah, I think it added to like this kind of moodiness about, in like sonically to the record too. But yeah, so I think this is a deeply personal record, like lyrically for me, because I was kind of struggling to understand these things about my own past that I had no idea or access to.
Yeah You just feel like this is maybe like the most vulnerable record then in some ways lyrically for yourself?
Yeah I would say so. I feel like in the past there was a lot of like you can kind of hide behind abstraction and poetry and it maybe is more of a defense mechanism to like frame or articulate something in a different way.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's maybe more, there's more of like a consistent reference point, to the lyrics of this album, like to real experiences and real people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And diving into like your family's stories and how they came here and is it do you feel like there's a different line you have to like kind of toe when you're maybe telling other people's stories and still like maintaining that poetic mystery to the thing but also wanting to share some real life experience?
Yes, actually it's as I'm explaining it right now I feel like I'm filtering what I'm saying because I also want to honor the people whose story it is.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to like avoid saying who in particular like a lot of the songs are about.
Yeah.
Because I mean I think there when you deal with like the past and it's been like so natural to not talk about it, there's usually like a lot of shame associated with it or like something prevents you from like bringing up the past again. And I don't want to like out the person like whose stories it is.
Absolutely.
Like one of the stories in here is this person who immigrated left a daughter behind in Korea, and I was just so shocked when I heard that story because I had not heard it before and had no idea that something like that was in their background and past. and I was like trying to understand what the situation was and what the motivating factors were. And I think this person is maybe not willing to like fully share the whole story.
Yeah.
So there's something in my, like as I'm explaining all of this, like kind of filtering out a lot of details.
Yeah. You want to be respectful.
Yeah.
Of these stories and these people that you are sharing about.
Yes.
So that makes sense.
Yeah.
Do you also feel like that's like really empowering to the music as far as like in the live show and in recording this particular record where you're like, damn, there's a lot of emotion flowing through me when I'm delivering these vocals and like the heaviness and the depth of the music?
Yeah. I mean, I think it is like, I feel like performing is a lot like acting and you're like trying to get into like the character.
Yeah.
And so I do think with this, because this person who a lot of the songs are inspired by is very close to me, like I can kind of like, I won't say like feel what they've felt, but like when I put myself in that headspace, it feels very palpable. It's like very real. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, this is the Return Forever record is definitely my favorite Fourth Wall record that has come out. So
that's very good to hear. Thank you.
Very stoked about it. I feel like you just like really, I don't know, dialed in some depth on this thing. And it's just like thinking about a track like Grain by Grain, just like this real cinematic feel, which I feel like is always kind of like existed in the Fourth Wall world with all the different tones and like layers of production, that there has been like this cinematic sci-fi kind of vibe to like a lot of it. But like this one in particular just seems like it hit another level.
Yeah. Yeah, I think...
listen to a lot of soundtracks.
Yes, we listen to a lot of soundtracks.
Would you say, like, film in general is, like, a... obviously, you mentioned, you know, books are a big influence, but, like, when you're watching a movie or that seeps into your brain and, like, the way music plays into films and stuff?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think I am a fan of film, and I think it's, like, a... one of those mediums that is just so all-encompassing. Like, when you watch a film that's, like, really devastatingly good, I think because, like, the format of it, too, like, your attention is demanded of. Like, if you're in the theater, like, it's not all in the background. Like, you go to see this, like, work of art. And so I feel like, that level of, like, attentiveness to all the details is something I think we think about with the soundscapes.
Yeah, sound too, like in film, I think really makes such a impact.
Yeah,
like what you're seeing too.
Casey, are you paying attention much to lyrics like while the process is happening, or is it like something that kind of hits you later when the record is done, kind of thing?
I think it's definitely like a later when the record's done. Just kind of like soaks in.
Yeah.
They're playing it so many times, but I don't know. Like, I guess going into making the music, it's more just like having idea, like, I don't know, taking something from like film or like soundtrack that we heard or like applying that into a section of the song that could be cool. Or I mean, we're doing some experimentation for sure.
Yeah,
after listening to soundtracks and just having fun. I feel like learning and like actively learning and trying to do new things or discovering new concepts, like musically, or just always trying to be like, I don't know, trying to be better.
Yeah.
Like trying to just grow like musically or find new techniques. It's probably part of the process.
you're like actively seeking that stuff out, like
yeah.
wanting to find different ways to approach things and not totally. Getting like stuck in the
yeah.
same things that even if they've worked before.
Right. Exactly. And like, yeah, trying to keep it, yeah, keep it fresh. And like lately I've been going to the symphony a lot, here in town, just taking that in. And like Kendall's introduced me to like a bunch of like choral works, which I think we were talking about earlier, but like, just like, yeah. just hearing that and how powerful that can be. And then how you can apply that to the music or, you know, the song.
Yeah. Was there a different approach in making this record that you all hadn't like really explored prior? Or like, do you feel like the records that you've made before this one, like informed a lot of like what you wanted to get out of this thing or like the process that made it happen?
I feel like this one was different. I feel like every rec, I don't know if this is like when you're in that creative soup. I don't know. Like I feel like it always feels different.
Yeah.
And I think it still does. Like I think the way we did things or the things we were listening to at the time or the kind of like textures and vibes we were going for was different.
Yeah.
We did experiment with a lot of different instruments too. Like I had recently bought an iPad for the first time in my life and like discovered all the different ways of manipulating sound that are kind of unique to that.
Yeah.
And also all these synthesizers, these kind of like, yeah, that way of like dealing with sound was very foreign to me because I'm a guitar player at bottom, and
this is why you need Kendall's synth station
yes,
for the
yeah,
for the live
need
show.
The station. Yeah, exactly.
And that like honestly frees up the like I feel like so much freer on stage too, because like having that section just
yeah.
taking doing its thing.
Yeah,
just some pads and stuff.
Yeah, like really yeah. opens yeah. it up together. To like allow you to do more things. Make you know on the guitar or
yeah
elsewhere
yeah so yeah I think that was a big different approach, is like what other instrumentation could be included and kind of yeah I feel like it kind of made us think more compositionally, like
yeah.
what instrument is doing what note and like why is it that instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I think yeah it was a different mindset, and like I feel like we, like Casey was saying, always are trying to do something we've never done before, like kind of feel really new at something.
Yeah.
And I think that's important for our, it's just, it feels good to discover a new way of doing things more than just kind of like relying on your ability to do something all the time. Yeah. So it did feel a lot different, this record.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And is it has it been pretty easy to like translate to the live show as far as like the songs on this record? Are you thinking about that much when you're like actually making the record of like, oh, how are we going to replicate this? Or is it more just like this freewheeling approach of like, let's just make the best sounding track we can and we will figure out how it translates yeah. live later?
Well, now we got the tower.
Yeah.
Tower. So power. That's
got the tower.
Yeah, that's yeah. a big.
that does make a huge difference, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to like feel as limited.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like when we make records though, it's been mostly like we'll deal with it later. Like we just want what's recorded to be like the best thing possible.
Yeah.
And I've always thought like, oh, that's the thing that will be have the longer lifespan of anything.
Yeah.
So that should be perfected, and then we'll figure out the live thing later. And sometimes we do things a little differently live than it is on the record because of limitations or because a different way is more fun or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I yeah. do think like too, when we are like playing or recording, I think mm-hmm. we always have in the back of our minds that like
yeah.
we will be playing these live.
Right.
So like
yes.
You're not just like trying to make a studio record
yeah.
necessarily.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that, I think that is important.
And yeah.
I think we do use some samples now, but for most of the mm-hmm. like live performances, I would say, were actually playing all the noises for the most part.
Yeah, it definitely feels like nothing is missing from the live show.
Yeah. You know?
Like from listening to the records, seeing the show, I think that's like...
That's good to hear.
I don't know. Sometimes you go to a show and you're like, oh, I feel like this part wasn't necessarily as full as maybe the record. And I don't think it's necessarily a thing of like always having to replicate everything, but like, can you make it feel like it's not missing something?
Yes.
Like doesn't necessarily have to be that exact same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll go back and like re-listen to our songs too, because sometimes, you know, you won't listen to your own songs. Like, I'm not sitting there like jamming to.
Oh, you're not just hanging out all the time. You know? Yeah. You're not like me riding around in the car listening to my own podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, cool question, man. Yeah, that was good.
So yeah, I'll try to like go back and listen to the recordings again, and like sometimes I'll be like, oh yeah, like I'm playing that live. Like I need to start like playing that again, or like remembering parts. Cause cause it is such a long process of recording and, you know, going back and like adding parts and building like in that way that, you know, sometimes I feel like you gotta like go back and like really listen to it again and try to like, mm-hmm. you know, like even up like recently, I'm like, oh, my tone in this song is like way harsher. Like I need to make that more harsh in the like live performance or aspects like that.
Stefan, having another songwriter and lyricist in the band in Kendall, is that something you've like, are you bouncing ideas, like some of your ideas openly with lyric stuff? Like is there points where you're ever getting stuck and you're kind of like, Kendall, what do you think about this? Like, how do I turn this phrase? Or like, has it gotten to that point yet?
I think it could go there. I think like the record was mainly written by the time.
I've heard some cool demos though. You've shared random stuff with me over the.
Now Stefan's like, Kendall.
Years.
Kendall will be singing these lyrics too.
Yeah,
I have to make sure they're not too dumb.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I would imagine that that's maybe like your new level of like intimidation is that you've brought somebody into the band that is very skilled.
I gotta be on my best game here. The record's before, and you know.
Yeah, you're not allowed to go
full
back.
But yeah, I think with this record, it was like mostly written.
Yeah.
But it was like kind of a nice thought to like think about someone else singing it.
Yeah.
I feel like that is a great motivator to just edit your own lyrics. It's like just thinking that, oh, another person is gonna say the words that you write. It does like make things feel I don't know, like there's more at stake.
Kendall, is it always pretty easy for you to like sing these lyrics that you didn't write yourself with conviction? Like I know you have experience singing, you know, vocals that are not your own in the past, and like even some of the songs that you're exploring in Star Over, singing like some of your friends' covers, and things like that.
Yeah, I've definitely I've done backup vocals on, you know, a few other projects, but nothing so consistent as this. And I think for me, coming from the background of somebody who writes lyrics and stuff too, like I like to know what I'm singing and I like to understand the stories and things like that, but I'm not always like the greatest at asking. So I think it's been cool like seeing press come out around the new singles and things, and it's given me more perspective into what I'm actually saying.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool, because then, you know, I have that to hold on to the next time I go to perform it.
Yeah.
I've got that in the back of my head and can hopefully like help communicate the story in the best possible way.
For sure.
I
know you guys have been living here for a really long time, but how do you maybe feel like coming from Hawaii and being from there like maybe informs the lens of this band and the music that comes out
That's a good question. I don't know. It's kind of weird because I think, like we were talking about before, the kind of music we made didn't feel like it had a home in Hawaii. Although yeah. that could be, I mean, it came out of that, I think, outsider mentality.
Yeah.
Like, I think that, being from Hawaii was, it was difficult to be like a band of our, with our style of music there.
Cause it's not like this traditional
yes,
style
yeah.
of Hawaiian music or.
Yeah. But I feel like sometimes we definitely have sonic references to it. Like the, like I feel like some moments in the, maybe in this record even, I was thinking about like slack key guitar playing and we'll definitely play with different tunings that are kind of like how a guitar would be tuned in Hawaii. It's kind of a weird thing. I think it's still, like Hawaii is still part of us,
yeah.
like, even though we're not there, so... I don't know. What would you say?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we're obviously born and raised in Hawaii, but I think with it, both our cases, like our folks were like not from there originally either. So kind of like, it's like a little bit of a different mm-hmm. take on Hawaii.
I think it's complicated, honestly.
Yeah, totally.
'Cause I think when we say that we're from Hawaii, one like reaction is they kind of conflate being Hawaiian with being from Hawaii. But the truth is like, our parents are not from there initially either. So we can't really say that we are Hawaiian, at least like ethnically speaking.
Yeah.
And like we weren't raised with that necessarily.
Yeah,
within that like
that native culture.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, we're very aware of it and exposed to it, and like
but it's totally natural for people who are from Hawaii to have this experience where it's like this melting pot of all these like Asian cultures, and everyone's kind of from elsewhere there at mm-hmm. some point in their lives. So I feel like that. Thematically, I feel like our band has thought about identity a lot and like otherness, and I think that definitely kind of informs the songwriting a lot. So it's definitely a complicated
I would thing. Say we're like in the middle we're from but Hawaii that,
yeah
you know
but that's a very from Hawaii thing
yeah
to be
totally.
In the middle
just in the
middle.
And speaking to It's always impressive to me when a band can even survive for like 5 years, but to think about 15 years. And Kendall, I know that you're newer to the gang for the last like couple years. But even that is like it's like you've been
fast.
In this band for 2 years, but for Casey and Stefan, like thinking about how long y'all have been playing music together, like what do you think attributes to the sustainability of a project going on for 15 years or so, and like what keeps bringing you guys back to wanting to play music together?
I don't know, we're just really good friends, and like I don't know, I it's hard for me to think about what other hobby I would have to take on if I didn't do this, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I feel honestly, I was thinking about that the other day too, like I just feel so like grateful and blessed to like still get to play music and have like a creative like outlet with my good friend and friends, and it's like, I mean, you know, whether or not anything comes of it, it's just like a very great thing to have in my life, and hope it continues for a long time. And whether or not anything comes of it, really, it's like not about I think it's just, it's a joy to do and to make at the end of the day. And that's kind of the motivation to keep doing it.
Is there anything like in particular that you like recognize as like special to this like particular dynamic?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like you probably share the same feeling where it's like
totally different, actually.
Yeah, yeah, it's a total drag for you.
Yeah, that's
like, great. I gotta.
Oh, Casey showed up again.
Play music
still
with
wants
Casey.
To play music. With me. God damn it.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah, it's. I mean, it's crazy to think, but like in LA, like I wasn't even 21 yet, so like, yeah. I wasn't able to go to the like a show with you at that time.
yeah,
but now to think back, like now it's. I kind of joke that like I'm like in a dad rock band, but I'm like not. We're not dads, but
I mean, the theme of this whole podcast seems to be that we're old now.
Like, yeah,
15
I did not
years.
Say that.
Yeah,
I didn't say that. You could have started this band when you were six.
Just the sound of 15 years, like, really stings. Yeah. Like, that is a long time.
But also, what a cool way to like document your life in some way that like you have these four records to kind of like show the growth not only of the band but like you as people and you know your experimentation and like
it's fun
what
to
your lives look like now
to listen back to like the first record and just how different how far it's come. It is cool to look back and
it is cool
and obviously like you some of that stuff still resonates like when you bring back a song like Furnace and like re-explore it and like must hold some weight for you still.
Yeah, it's definitely maybe part of it was like I need to like fix this old song. But no, it is like still meaningful enough to make me want to like revisit it in a different way also.
I wasn't even familiar with that track, honestly. I was I hadn't listened to that first record too much until earlier today. Like I was listening to it this morning because really familiar with the new record and like some songs from the past too, but you know, I was like this is The Furnace. Which I thought it was so rad.
That old record, I'm like, man, I wish I knew how to play guitar for that first one.
Where would you say just to like wrap things up, where would you say you like see the most growth in the band or like maybe even like within one another from like what you've experienced over the years?
Like just an experience that's felt the most
yeah growth? Like whether it's like creatively or just like as a band or just, you know, maybe in the songwriting or you know, anything that comes to mind when you think about like growth from where you started this thing to where you're at now.
Yeah. What do you think?
Kendall, you go ahead. Where do you see the most growth in these two?
This is the moment we're all dreading where we just pass eye contact back and forth frantically.
I feel like we've never taken it too seriously. I think in a way, and like we've always had a good time doing it.
Still like finding room to play. Like even like what it sounded like with making this record.
Yeah, totally. Like, and like, you know, thankfully I don't think we've had any like ego issues. It's always just been very like, just fun. Like I love showing up. I love just band practice. It's a great time, you know.
Same here. It's like my favorite time of the week, honestly.
Yeah, like, it's like,
that's a good place to be. I feel like when it's not like this burden of like, oh, we have rehearsal again.
Yeah, it's
like,
no, it's always it's a joy. Yeah, and, you know, lose just hours just playing music and I think also just not, never getting like always holding things very loosely and just being very accepting of, you know, whatever happens and just enjoying our time together, I think is probably been what's kept us together for so long, bro.
It's like such a sweet answer.
I mean, it's true. It's been, It's been awesome.
I mean, that I have to imagine that speaks to the sustainability of the thing too.
Yeah.
It's just like, you're just stoked to have fun with each other making music and not always taking it so seriously. Cause I think that can put you in a bad spot sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I think as we've played for so long now, I think it's at this, like, now we're pretty comfortable with what we're doing and, you know, having a good time. And I think it shows on this album that probably the most, I mean, I think it's the coolest one we've done. Just, yeah, feels like maybe the most organic. And yeah, I don't know, it's been fun.
Yeah, it has been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I feel like, yeah, really, it's just like, I think we're just friends first, and like, I think we're always like sharing art with each other. And I think that's like kind of this, that's like never changed. So I think that's like one of the foundations of why we do it together, is like, we just like get excited about some new or different thing that we're listening to or watching or reading.
And just recently we started a collaborative Spotify playlist. Put fun music that we've been listening to on.
Extraordinarily eclectic.
It took so long to do that.
So
but.
Cool.
It's rad to have that too. Just like people to share art with, or like things that you find inspiring. Yeah. Like, oh, I watched this movie. Like, this was incredible.
Totally.
Like, just especially like sharing music with people, and like, there's so much music coming out constantly, or like so much music that has come out over the years that you can't possibly keep up with all of it. So when you have other people that maybe like are exploring different corners of it and can like put you onto things that are super inspiring and that you would have never discovered on your own, I think that's like the collective thing is so exciting, just even from that aspect, or like even just, you know, the hangs that I've had with both of you in the past of just like, oh, I didn't even know about this thing. Like, I'm gonna go check this out, or so.
Yeah, totally.
Right on. It's my favorite record, Return Forever.
Sweet.
Go check it out. I'll put the links in the episode notes so people can keep up with y'all. And I've been wanting to have y'all on the podcast for a long time, so I'm glad that we finally got to do it. And I'm glad it's kind of like in celebration of this new record and like 15 years of this band and a new era of the band with Kendall coming in. And one of my favorite Portland-based bands, The Fourth Wall. So thanks for doing the thing.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks, man.
And we talked about the joy of things, so I think it's, you know, we got to play it out with Only the Joy.
Nice.
Like, that's the best song to play the episode out with, for sure. We end every episode of the podcast with the guest saying the tagline for the show, which Kendall might remember, but it's a program, and it means absolutely nothing. It's just the way my grandfather says the news program or any other program that you're involved in. He refers to it as a program. And this is kind of a new thing, but this is like the only time I will ask y'all to like look into the camera, and you can do it as a group if you want, or however you want to deliver this. It's a program. You can do it, but
should probably harmonize. Do you want to take the third? Kendall?
You can look right into that camera and give us the fourth wall. It's
camera?
Right
I think
there.
It's on the
however you want to do
How
it.
How do we? Does someone want to?
Do you want to count?
Click off. What's the root?
What's the root?
Kendall,
are we really going to sing it?
No, I don't think
should we just say it?
Know. Yeah, let's just say it.
Okay. Let's just say it. Someone count. You count.
One, two, three.
It's a program.
They nailed it, everybody. That's The Fourth Wall. The new record is called Return Forever. And you can find it wherever you stream things. And is there vinyls of this record
there
coming
will
out?
Yeah.
Stay tuned for that if you're a vinyl lover like myself. I certainly needed another record to add in here.
Yes.
I'll definitely be putting that new Fourth Wall record into my vinyl collection. And all the links will be in the episode notes, playing it out with Only the Joy from that new record. And if you're new to this band, there's a lot to go back and check out. And appreciate y'all hanging out with me today, jumping on the mics with me. This is very cool. And like I said, just absolutely love your band. And all the links will be in the episode notes. And that's the Jelly Jams. And we will catch you on the flip side, Portland, or wherever you are listening from. We did it.
We did it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that was super fun.